Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. In this episode, we're talking about the top trade sales for February 2020 as sold from publishers through Diamond to retailers in North America. This is what goes into the stores, not what comes out of the stores. Joining me, as always, is TJ. How you doing today, TJ?
Doing very well.
Now, it has been an incredibly long period of time since we recorded January numbers. I think it's been all of, 5 minutes?
Yep.
But I was behind on this, so I appreciate you being willing to do two episodes back-to-back. So we are still recording this on March 29th. So if things have changed in the comic industry since we did the January numbers, I haven't had time to discover that yet. But, you know, it's been a few minutes, so who knows?
Mm-hmm.
February numbers looked better than January numbers. I think sales were up about 30,000 units. That's good. Still below kind of the average for the top 300, but again, we're talking first quarter. First quarter's usually not great, so I don't think it's anything to really panic about, but it would be kind of really nice if we were going into this whole pandemic situation with COVID-19 off a really robust best sales ever, and retailers were just in a great place and stuff like that, versus, it's the start of the year, and not so great.
Mm-hmm.
Flip side, since it's usually not so great in the beginning of the year, hopefully retailers had budgeted for that and are going to do okay. If we look at the breakdown of trade sales, things are really kind of weird. Marvel had 43.99% of the units, 54.39% of the total retail dollars for the top 300 trades. So good month for Marvel. DC, not so much. 16.63% of the units, 16.98% of the retail dollars. That's lower than usual. Image had a good month with 12.83% of the units and 9.56% of the dollars. And then Viz coming in with 9.41% of the units and 4.98% of the dollars. So normally we see a closer split between Marvel and DC, and didn't see that this time. And we saw Image kind of get in front of Viz. Viz having that lower percentage by dollars because they tend to have more of that $9.99 price point and just a lower overall average price point.
Absolutely.
So I think what we're seeing here is a bit unusual in terms of how it's split. We've also got just a ton of other publishers doing, you know, a fraction of a percent of sales. Really, once we get past most of the other premier publishers, because after Viz comes Dark Horse, then IDW, then Boom. Dynamite, however, way down near the bottom of the list with only one reorder activity item on the list this time at all. So I don't know if that was a scheduled thing or it just kind of happened that way, or if stuff found was below the top 300.
Mm-hmm. I think with Dynamite, probably a combination of both. They obviously, they're now a premier publisher, but they still don't put out as much material. And I think a lot of their sales are under the top 300 for sure.
Well, and I think the quality of some of their material varies quite a bit.
Yes, that's a very positive way of saying it.
Yeah, I've liked some of their books more than others, and I think that they need to, I don't want to say tighten up on their quality. I think their quality needs to be more in line with what I would like. I'll say it that way. For me, obviously, if it's working for them, it's working for them.
Yeah.
We do see a number of manga publishers showing up here. Graphics, Seven Seas, Kodansha, Yen, Square Enix. Let's see, there's probably a few others here on the list. So good to see that manga is doing well these days.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
If we jump over to the top trades list itself, our top item is the Harleen hardcover, reprinting the 3-issue Black Label thing at 6,121 units. This, I thought, was fairly well received on the comic side, so I don't want to say I'm disappointed with these sales, But if anything was going to do better this month, obviously it probably would have been this.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure what to make of this. I think Stepan Sej is the correct pronunciation, whatever. I think he did a phenomenal job on this. And I would have liked to have seen it top 10,000 or something. Not sure what held it back from doing that.
Yeah. You know, it is a hardcover and the cover price was $29.99, so that may have been some of it. I almost wonder if, it used to be 10,000 was the level at which we said this is, you know, a pretty successful, you know, for a new title in the collected edition space, but I think maybe 5,000 to 8,000 might be the new cutoff.
I would almost go 4,000 to 5,000.
Yeah.
Because this is, you know, yet another month where really only two things are over 5,000, three things over 4,000.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, again, I think it was a little anomalous when we had things like Walking Dead, Saga, and a few other things that would do in the 20, 25 plus, you know, 1,000 range. We just don't have any titles like that these days, Marvel or DC included for the most part. Or if so, they're happening, you know, once a quarter, once every 6 months or something versus on a regular basis.
Absolutely.
I don't really attribute that to, I don't want to say like trade fatigue or something crazy like that. I don't think so. I think there's a ton of stuff coming out, and we talked last month about how many things in the top 10 were reorder, and we're in that same boat here too. We've got like 6 items of reorder activity in the top 10.
Yeah, I think if you go down to all the way down to, you know, from 1 to 15, what you're seeing here is overall reorder activity. But then if you look at the overall titles, the majority of them are Star Wars. And then if you look over at the retail rank,
yep,
it's clear to me that Marvel did some sort of offer to the retailers where we will give you quite a big discount on this. And if you order either a good amount or you order more than one of these titles, we're going to give you an even bigger discount. So because I think if you look at the, both the retail rank and then the fact that it's all the Star Wars line, they were clearing out quite a bit of their material. Because also when you look at the number of times these have previously been on the list, quite a few of them are over a year old. So,
well, many of them are for like 2016 or something like that.
Yeah.
So definitely it was older material getting blown out at bargain basement prices, mm-hmm, or heavy discounts to some degree.
Yeah.
That's going to be something that's going to get a little weird moving forward, because I know some publishers like Marvel are going to heavily discount stuff with the shutdown during April and even some material in March leading into that, just in an effort to cushion the blow to retailers during the pandemic.
Yeah. And just looking at the number of sales for these, they start from anywhere from like 3,600 odd units down to like 3,100 odd units. And that's a pretty close spread when you think about it. And I think it probably was, they're like, if you order 5 of these, we'll give you an extra 20% off. You know, it's just clear that there's some very specific discounting going on there.
Well, absolutely. And there's also a clustering of a lot of the Star Wars Legend Epic stuff,
mm-hmm,
down at ranks 24 to 29-ish.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely think there was a big Star Wars push. I think it did well. I think the discounting certainly helped that. It's interesting, though, to see just so many things in the top 30 or 31 items, about 2/3 of its reorder activity, and I think almost all of that, I think actually all of it, is Star Wars stuff.
Mm-hmm. So it looks like someone had a corner of the warehouse they needed to clean out.
That actually could be a very good thing for retailers, you know, coming out of February, going into March and stuff, if they were able to get these at, you know, a really good price and then turn around and sell them for a decent profit.
Yeah. Well, and it's material that's known in terms of like it's a property that the public knows. So it is good to have that material available versus something that's more obscure and harder to hand sell.
Yeah, I think if you can't sell Star Wars to a geek audience, you got problems.
Yeah, you have bigger problems than this, right?
Yeah. Now, maybe not to everybody in the geek audience, but again, it should be pretty easy to sell.
Mm-hmm.
That does, like I said, though, eat up a lot of those top items. Die Volume 2, Split the Party trade paperback, was the number 2 item, 5,383 units. And then Batman Tales, Once Upon a Crime trade paperback at rank number 3 with 4,450 units. The next new item is My Hero Academia Volume 23, and we'd gotten number 22 last month. And this one did 3,208 units. I don't read manga. Is this actually coming out on a monthly basis?
So in general, they get published in monthly chunks, but they're smaller than the full amount. And it's obviously the collected editions we see over here are generally months to years behind what's the current being published. So if something takes off in America, then what they'll do is they'll increase the cadence for the publication of the thicker volumes to catch up with, so they can harvest all of that revenue. Obviously, if something is doing as well, then they'll release it much slower. But in general, you know, it's not being published this fast in Japan. But you know, obviously it's doing well, so they're publishing more of the back material that they have.
So in simplistic terms, if we had not seen My Hero Academia Volume 22 do as well as it did last month and historically be doing well, we would not have seen Volume 23 this month.
Yeah, usually on the American side, now obviously with their biggest hits, they will try and publish it generally a new volume every 3 months, but sometimes for the slower series, it's 6 months, you know, one volume a year. It just depends on what they think the market can bear. For something like One Piece, they've already caught up with all the up to the new material, so they can't put it out faster than it comes out. But before that, when they were, you know, when One Piece was kind of establishing itself in the market, they had probably a 30 to 40 volume lead in the Japan market. So they were able to put it out as quickly as they wanted to, as quickly as the market could absorb it, basically.
Well, that's one of the many things that makes the manga just operate differently than other collected editions. If they can be throttling the release schedule based on how it's selling, i.e. how popular and profitable it is, and how much material they've got in the backlog. Obviously, if they're current, they can't go faster.
Yeah.
But if they're starting something new that has 40 potential volumes of it and it's a smash hit, they could crank it out as fast as they can translate it.
Well, exactly. And that's another one of the aspects is, you know, quote unquote, the material, the creation has already been paid for. And so it's just like the found money of the collected edition in a foreign market. And obviously, you know, because the manga market has been here for quite a while, they probably, just like our companies, build into the overall profit loss for any series, you know, an expected amount for the collected editions. You know, I'm sure they do that somewhat in here. But like I said, anytime a series takes off faster or hotter than they were expecting, then they can ramp up release schedule. You know, they can go from once every 6 months to once every 3 months release a volume, or from once every 3 months to once a month, you know, for short, consistent periods.
It's funny because I think American publishers, Marvel, DC, could do that for some things, obviously cannot do that for others.
Absolutely.
You know, that Black Cat Volume 1 that we saw last month, there's no way they could get a Volume 2 out this month. They haven't had another six issues get out.
Well, and that's another different aspect of the manga market, is that a lot of the successful mangas, initially it's one creator, and then, as you know, working very, very, very hard to produce the material, because they are on a relatively punishing schedule in terms of to stay in the anthology series that they start in. But then once it becomes popular enough, they basically get assistant artists that take away some of the background drawing or some of the repetitive drawing from them. You know what I mean? It becomes almost this like a team of people are working on it to get it produced. And that allows them to produce consistently. And also sometimes if it's popular enough, they can put out more material quicker.
Yeah. But it's interesting because I think Marvel and DC, for certain things such as, you know, reprints of older material, they could, if, hey, we're doing well with reprints of, you know, classic X-Men stuff or whatever, they could be cranking that out a lot faster.
Oh, I completely agree there.
I think part of the challenge with that is finding stuff they haven't already reprinted.
Yeah, that's true. You know, there are certain eras that haven't been collected yet, and you wonder, if there's no new material coming out for a bit, they may focus on getting some of that stuff collected properly and organized and promoted, you know?
Well, I know over at DC, there's a period from somewhere in the 70s to somewhere in the 90s-ish where the royalty structure was such it's just not profitable or viable to reprint some of that. And I'm wondering if how that plays out on digital, how that plays out elsewhere, if the current situation with the pandemic, stores shutting down, new comics not coming out, if that's going to exert any kind of pressure or influence on that. And if it would benefit some of the creators to have some of that, you know, hey, yeah, it's lower than what you had agreed to be getting back in the day, but it's something.
That's a good point.
And if that could be worked out to be mutually beneficial, to where the publishers aren't taking advantage of the creators, but the creators can get the benefit. The irony is that would benefit creators who've been in the industry literally for decades over the ones that are kind of doing a lot of the work today.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, no easy answers there. Let's put it that way.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Really, if we filter out some of that Star Wars reorder activity, we're below 3,000 units in pretty short order.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this goes back to what we were discussing in the January data of, stores are, not everything needs to be collected in trade. Stores need to order what they know they can sell. And I expect that to tighten up substantially, in the coming months. And it'll be surprising to me, although I'll be happy, if we do continue to see things in the, 2,000 to 3,000 or 4,000, unit range, in the coming months.
Oh yeah. I think unfortunately we'll see a, I don't know. It also depends on how much material the stores carry it in total, to have stuff. If they can't get shipments for a bit, are they going to be able to, what can they sell through in the stores? What can they ship out to customers if they're not open? What do they have?
Yeah. And I think each store is going to be a little different based on if they're open, if customers can make it to them, what material they have on the shelf. And most importantly, how well can they match that material to their customer base?
Exactly.
Because if you've got somebody starving for material, but all the material you have is something they're not going to like, probably not going to sell it too well.
Yeah.
I remember shopping at a store in Mira Mesa, California, where one of the people working there, Joe, just had a knack, at least with me, of recommending stuff that I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the kinds of store employees that could be worth their weight in gold these days. And it's easy to say, hey, recommend stuff people will like. It's hard to actually do.
Yeah, no, for sure. Especially with the amount of material that's coming out now.
Well, the amount of material, and I think also the challenge of articulating why somebody would like it and the challenge people have articulating why they like something.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
There are going to be some people who say, yeah, I love book X, but is it because of the writing? Is it because of the art? Is it because of the concept? Is it just new and different, and therefore something just like it won't float your boat as much? It's tough. Now, two of the items I want to talk about are kind of interesting. At rank 20, we've got Dawn of X Volume 1.
I did highlight that, actually, because I thought that was, considering how the other previous series had done, and this is not reorder activity, I thought that was actually kind of low for what it was.
Well, what it is the first issue of all the Dawn of X titles.
Oh, okay.
So you're getting the first X-Men, X-Force, Marauders, Excalibur, Fallen Angels, New Mutants issue.
Oh.
And then down at rank 36, you're getting the second issue.
Ah, interesting.
Now, this is stuff, I forget if I talked to you about it, if I talked with Sam and Eric about how, I think it was Sam and Eric, how they're collecting this stuff. Mm-hmm. Because I still expect, and I think they've already solicited, in X-Men 1 through 6.
Gotcha.
Now, the question is, does this undercut those sales down the line? Does it not? Is this something that was a great idea going into an unexpected pandemic as a sampler thing? I don't know.
Yeah. And then also, I mean, the tough part is what we see here is sales from Diamond to retailers. So you think the retailers would be smart enough to be able to suss out that this is what it is, because I would be worried about a end reader who is trained to pick up, they pick up a trade and they're expecting 1 through 6. And this is just 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. You know what I mean? Confusion in the marketplace.
Flip side, if you've got somebody who enjoyed the House of X, Powers of X hardcover and you want to give them another collection because they don't want to do single issues.
Yeah.
This could work.
That's true.
And it comes down to what is the frequency of this, because that next volume shipped that next week.
Yeah, I would almost think that if you did this, you would want the material to come out relatively quickly, because if they're reading all those ones and they're almost, if they're written right, quote unquote, cliffhangers for the next issue, you need to be able to get that relatively soon.
Soon, yes. Next week is too soon, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's probably true. That's probably true. But when is Marvel ever not published as quickly as they want?
That is true. They've often in the past done the final issue of a mini series and solicited the trade to ship like the next week or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that's potentially short-sighted. I'm curious how long these Dawn of X titles, trades are going to go, and how that plays out with the differing frequency of them and stuff like that. I think it's an interesting experiment, ranking at 20 and 36 for these. Not bad. On average, I'd say, you know, most stores got a copy of the first and about half or a little over of the second.
Yeah.
I can see where retailers could use that first Dawn of X trade as a sampler sort of a thing to get people onto the different titles in a way that that second volume wouldn't work as well as.
That makes sense.
But we'll see how that does. I do think that the X titles are really the strongest they've been in ages. So I think that's, you know, a good thing overall for the industry right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we need more good things like that.
Absolutely.
Of course, between them, we've got just a ton of those Star Wars ones. I'm wondering if there's more, I don't say found material like that to be had that Marvel can be blowing out at discounts to be helping out retailers over the coming months or not, but it'll be interesting if there is.
Yeah, I mean, that might be one of the pillars of support they offer, is that for a lot of that stuff, they're, you know, they extend that deep discounting. And for, depending on how long the freeze is, you may need things that are not evergreen, because this stuff isn't necessarily evergreen, but you know how quickly the single issues, if they're on the shelf for more than 2 weeks, are almost useless to sell. But this stuff is at least can sell longer than that, you know.
It'll be interesting to see if there's any impact on comic book shelf life before, during, and after the shutdown.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously the stuff that was released on March 25th is going to be kind of the new issue for an indefinite period of time.
Yeah, right. You know, it's crazy to think about that.
I mean, in your neck of the woods where stores are still open, people going to go next week and, well, I didn't get it last week, but there's nothing else, so I guess I'll get it this week.
Yeah. Well, and let, you know, who knows if they go this week and it's open, and then in the intervening days on a Thursday or Friday, the governor sends out a message saying non-essential stores need to close, and then they can't go back next Wednesday, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So.
Well, and that's why I think, the March data is going to be interesting, because here in February, coronavirus was a thing. I think it was still called that through the duration of February. I think it was not until March that it got officially named a COVID-19 and really kind of hit the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see any of the data we've got here as having been particularly impacted by the pandemic, whereas in March, it will change from week to week to week what that impact was.
Mm-hmm.
Starting in some areas, like California and whatnot, sooner than other areas that, as we're nearing the end of March, have not been as impacted. And it's going to be one of those things that, when was the Dawn of X number 3 trade paperback scheduled to come out? Did it come out in March? Is it going to be one of the ones stuck in the pipeline after the fact? What kind of inertia, you know, killing properties do we see over the coming months?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Now, one of the things I'm going to do real quick is I'm going to filter this list to Star Wars, because there's just a ton of this stuff on the list.
Yeah, I think that it was as Marvel does every so many months, they look at their balance sheet and their, you know, what their carrying cost is at their warehouses, and they say, well, it's better to get rid of this than pay for it to be sitting there.
There are 49 items out of the top 450. Of course, you got the top 500, but Star Wars doesn't show up below 450. So that's a staggering amount. Not all of it is reorder activity. We've got Star Wars Target Vader trade paperback nestled in there at rank 22. That does not look to have been particularly discounted. It did 2,362 units. At rank 40, we've got Star Wars Dr. Aphra Volume 7 Rogue's End trade paperback, 1,730 units. That's also new material.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Star Wars Legends of Luke Skywalker manga from Viz. That's new material, 1,215 units down at rank 64. And then at rank 134, we've got Star Wars Age of Republic hardcover, 703 units. And then at rank 163, Star Wars Adventures Volume 8, Defend the Republic trade paperback, 563 units. All of those came out in February for the first time. All the rest of this stuff is material from either 2015, 16, or the intervening years.
Gotcha.
that's just a staggering amount of material to essentially flood the market. Which, again, not a bad thing. I'm trying to think when did Rise of Skywalker come out? That would have been December?
Yeah, more recently than some of this other stuff.
Well, I was trying to think if they were doing this to time for the movie.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. With the discounting, I think it's more of just like inventory management, but...
Yeah, probably. Because as we record this, the DVD and Blu-ray has not yet come out, but is imminent.
Mm-hmm.
I have not seen the film, so I'm looking forward to picking it up.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I thought it was a good way to end the series. Obviously, I didn't think it was perfect, but I think you'll enjoy it.
Cool. So that accounts for, in the top 300, where most of it is, 81,200 units just of Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, when I was looking at the top 10, I was like, wow, that's very overrepresentative of what I'm used to. I'm used to seeing like one title in the top 10 to 20. So.
Well, and again, aside from that manga from Viz and that Star Wars Adventures from IDW, all of this is Marvel.
Yeah.
And that right there, I think, accounts for how Marvel did so disproportionately well this time around.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Like, you know, the number of units they're pushing out, and then obviously, you know, what your total dollars is just based on the cover price, right? It's not necessarily based on what the actual invoice was. So.
Right. It's based on the retail price because I don't have the invoiced amount.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously different retailers are at different discounting, so you wouldn't be able – it's just – we don't have that side of the data.
It'd be nice to get an averaged invoice price.
That would be great, right? I think that would actually tell you quite a bit about each publisher's business model, to be honest with you.
That's why I think we'll never get it.
Yeah.
Which is a shame.
Yeah.
So if we bounce through the rest of this, I'm trying to see what else looks interesting. And just, wow, so much of it again gets lost in that shuffle of Star Wars. I'm going to spend a minute and filter out Star Wars just to reduce the noise. I really wish Excel had a inverse selection option.
Oh, gotcha, yeah.
Where I could just select for Star Wars and then unflip a button and it would uncheck everything.
Mm-hmm.
But they do not.
So I'm looking at, you know, some of the normal image series we see, and a lot of the stuff there is for either new volumes or reorders in the 1,500 units, and I think that's kind of the, you know, what you see for series that are kind of continuing on, but, you know, you're just not having as many breakout hits at Image anymore. You just have a lot of the reorder activity, the few ones that have kind of established themselves like Saga, and a lot of your Monstrous, and a lot of the new ones are kind of, you know, they're lucky if they make it to volume 3, you know, they're just not as much sustained success there.
Yeah, I'm not as excited about some of the newer Image stuff as I have been about a few of the things in the past, but I'll be honest, I don't gravitate towards the Image titles for the most part, because, again, I like superheroes and stuff like that, and Image tends to do other things, which is great, and they do it well. They do a little more sci-fi, a little more of the dystopian sort of a thing, or the fantasy or whatever, which doesn't, you know, really work as well for me as it does for other people. But I don't think, to your point, I agree, they haven't really had the smash successes they've had in the past of Walking Dead, Saga, Jupiter's Legacy, even some of the other stuff by like Hickman or whatever, it would start well and then kind of peter away.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it's they're not, I don't want to say it's that they're not greenlighting the right thing. I mean, they're greenlighting what comes to them. I wonder if people are so busy trying to get that next big hit that they're trying to engineer a hit versus just do a passion project that becomes a hit.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know where they've kind of lost the magic on that. And I don't feel we're getting as much studio material as we were at one point. I mean, the Top Cow universe at one point with Witchblade, Darkness, and Artifacts and all that kind of a stuff really worked for me. It seems like that universe has kind of, you know, died down in terms of popularity and material.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the strongest studio, just anecdotally for me at the moment, not that I get the material, but Spawn's doing well.
Yeah, that's true.
But I do think they need to right the ship and figure out how to be getting better material there. And Sam and Eric and I have talked about this, and Eric's standpoint seems to be that a lot of those properties are going to other publishers such as Boom and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I think there's definitely some merit to that. If Image isn't giving the best deal or people feel they're better off going to another publisher, they're gonna.
Yeah. You know, I think it's becoming unfortunate. Well, I guess it's not unfortunate or fortunate. It's what's the best decision for you. So I think creators, the idea was, is when you went to Image, you retained all of the media rights. So that way, if you did break out, you'd be able to reap all of the reward. But the problem is people are realizing is that, well, what's the difference between how much of a reward are you reaping if you go to Image and you can only get 6 issues out before you don't have the money to keep going, or you go to Boom or IDW and you give them a percentage of your media rights, but they give you a page rate, which lets you keep making the book in hopes of then getting attention to get the media deal. You know what I mean? It's kind of a trade-off. When Image was in its kind of recent boom, you didn't have to make that trade-off because you could always know that you could at least get a certain number of issues out, or at least most could. But now I think the math is a lot harder. I think it's so many series don't get past their first trade that maybe it's better financially to give up a little bit of a percentage of the media rights to get that page rate and get more support from your publisher.
Well, I think it comes down to if you're going with the media rights as the end game, because that's where the big money is, and that makes sense, who's able to not only give you the best deal of what percentage of the media rights you get, but who's able to actually make the deal?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because if we look at, say, Dark Horse, they did a miniseries, one trade paperback of 4 issues worth of material for Dark Matter.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that was written by 2 of the people behind Stargate SG-1. And that actually turned into a 3-season TV show that Dark Horse was, I believe, materially involved in. So publishing it through Dark Horse, I think, helped them get that produced.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good deal. Sure, you might have gotten 100% of the profit or whatever from the deal if you'd done it through Image, but would you have gotten the deal?
Yeah, that's another good point, is a lot of that media side is relationships and who you know when you get access to people when they're looking for material and in an active deal-making phase. And if you're starting from scratch somewhere, sometimes it might be worth giving up a little bit of that percentage to be able to, you know, be able to get access to the people that actually do the deals.
Even if you're not starting out, because again, the 2 guys who wrote Dark Matter had been TV producers and writers.
Mm-hmm.
So they also had some connections and stuff like that, but it was in their best interest to do it that way. For whatever reason, I don't know. But It comes down to, you've got to look at more than just what rights are you signing away, but what does that publishing partner offer you?
Mm-hmm.
Be it page rate, be it editorial guidance, be it advertising, traffic in the books, or whatever. You got to figure out what works best for you. And I think there have been a lot of people that have had great success with the Image Central model, but having followed that model since it started, I've also seen a lot of people get that first issue out and lose their shirt and not be able to afford to get that second issue out. Whereas if they hadn't gone that route, they might have been able to get a whole miniseries worth out, maybe.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So there's no easy answers to this, and it comes down to, you know, shop it around and find out what's the best deal at the time, because it was changing before, and who knows how it's going to change moving forward.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they may have to reconsider the way they do contracts all over the industry, that's for sure.
Well, I think right now one of the most dangerous things for the industry is for people to assume what had been true before will remain true going forward.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I've heard around the discussion of should digital comics get released on April 1st, which as we record this is still a few days in our future,
mm-hmm.
is the notion that the digital audience is different than the print audience and does not cannibalize print sales. I agree that historically that has pretty much been true.
Mm-hmm.
I say pretty much because, yeah, there's a little overlap. We're not saying they're totally distinct. Whatever. Okay, fine.
But that was always in the context of the print comics being available, and that's the difference.
Exactly. That's a game changer. To what extent? Nobody knows.
Mm-hmm.
And we may not know. We may find out very quickly on April 1st. We may not. And that's something where, you know, conceivably in the span of a theoretical day, we could see the industry shift from Diamond being the linchpin because they control print distribution to Comixology and Amazon being the linchpin because it controls digital distribution.
Mm-hmm.
But we just don't know. But again, that assumption that what was true before would be true forever seems really dangerous.
I completely agree on that, that's for sure.
So what else do we got in here that looks interesting?
Let's see. I mean, in just in general, there's a lot of Marvel. I think that they're even outside the Star Wars, they're doing some cleaning up of their material. And that's not surprising considering they do that, I think, a couple times a year they'll do that. The other thing is just what we talked about in the past is just a lot of these collected editions, even ones that aren't reorder activity, have very low sales. Like there's some things down in like the 150 mark, you're only selling 700 copies. That's pretty low for something that's not a reorder.
Yeah, by the time we get down to rank 300, we're at 295 units. We dive down to rank 500, we're at 156 units.
Mm-hmm.
So some of these things are doing good to get in, every 10th store or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't say that as a bad thing. I think it's actually worse for something to get into a store that cannot move it than for it not to get in there at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think we're starting to see a lot of reorder activity and intermixed with new material not selling almost as well as reorder activity. And it's hard to know what to make of that. I mean, I look at some of these things where I see new trades coming out to, 500 or 600 units of sales. That's not good.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that's hard to know what's going on with that. For instance, at rank 159, GoGo Power Rangers Volume 6 trade paperback, 583 units, which is down from the 701 Volume 5 did, which is down from the 792 Volume 4 did, or the 807 Volume 3 did, or the 1018 Volume 2 did, or the 1260 the first volume did initially. So I expect things to have attrition over time. But when does it get to a point where, does the trade cover the cost of its own printing, and does it continue to be that icing on the cake that some titles require to keep the title afloat?
Yeah, I mean, that's why, especially when just even out of the top 100, that's such a low sales number to me in terms of if you have baked into your, you're below 1,000 copies, if you have baked into your profit loss statement, a certain amount of trades, I just can't imagine selling below 1,000 copies is, I mean, obviously this is just the direct market, but man, it does show you that the entire operation is the margins are very slim.
Well, and when we say it's just the direct market, it's worth calling out for a couple of reasons. Because one, it definitely is just the direct market. We're not counting stuff at Amazon or any other kind of mass market outlet or convention sales or direct from publishers or things like that. However, some of these things don't really have much activity outside the direct market.
That's true.
There are some things that do gangbusters out there because they're doing great in Scholastic or other venues. But I think some of these things that are just another trade of just another mainstream title aren't doing great elsewhere. So I think some of these things come down to if a new trade is coming out and doing in this 1,000-ish or below level, is it worth doing? If you were to stop doing these kinds of trades, would that get people more incentivized to get the single issues? Or is it something where they couldn't get the single issue and the trade's the only thing that's going to get them onto the title at all? And that's something where, again, more point of sales information, I think, is needed to figure that out. And it's going to differ from store to store. Some stores are going to do great with using trades to get people onto titles. Others, not so much.
Yeah. Well, and I think that there was a push by that new company that's doing that new point of sale system where they were hoping to eventually, once they got a decent of install base of stores, that they were going to have release some information. I don't know if they were just releasing it to the store owners or they were releasing it to the public as well, showing, at least some of the sales trends. Obviously, they wouldn't have it be attached to specific stores, but you could at least see some hard data about what actually sells,
Yeah, it's a shame we haven't had that information for a year or two before going into, a pandemic, shutdowns and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you've only got a few months, it's going to be hard to know what was really the trend on a regular basis before things went weird.
Yeah, and obviously, yeah, now all the data is going to be skewed anyway, so.
Well, and if you go down to rank 139, Agents of Atlas, Pandemonium, Trade Paperback, 666 units. That's just sort of funny. But that's bad sales.
Yeah.
And this would have been solicited, let's see, this was solicited back in November, which would have been before the series stopped without really concluding the story. So people at this point, I don't think, would have realized it's a lead into the Atlantis Attacks miniseries. But if I question how much this impacted the bottom line of profitability for that project.
Yeah.
And that certainly doesn't make me think that the Atlantis Attacks trade is going to do significantly better, since this was what set part of it up. And that was something that came out at the beginning of February. So while I think there might possibly potentially be a little impact on that last week of February, even that I doubt, but certainly stuff at the beginning of February, the pandemic, you can't lay, you know, the blame of bad sales, you know, at the feet of the pandemic for stuff at the beginning of February.
No, that makes sense. Yeah.
The timeline just doesn't work that way. But if I were a store and I was seeing a lackluster response to the miniseries, this would be one of those things I would do trade only. I don't know if I'd be building up a library of this on my shelf, unless Agents of Atlas historically does well on a slower but reliable basis.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a fair amount of stuff, again, in this area that I don't want to say should be doing better, but some of the stuff feels lower than it could have or possibly should have been.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. But I think the tough part is that we've just, for us on the collected edition side, we've seen an overall trend of this kind of slowing down of the numbers for us. And I don't know. I mean, at this point, it's probably been for the last six months to a year, right? Where we've just seen lower and lower numbers. So I think the market is changing for the trades. And I don't know if that's some of the other sales are bleeding to other markets, or if it's just the retailers are slowly but surely, you know, only spending their dollars very, very carefully on the collected editions.
I would be surprised if there was a significant increase in the mass market to compensate for this.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly possible. I'm not going to discount it, but.
Well, one thing I would say that I would disagree with you on is for this type of material, I completely agree with you. But for things like young reader books and those type of like kids books, that's where a lot of the growth is. And that's why you see DC so intent on pushing that material. And, you know, all those like standalone graphic novels that are kind of, targeted towards teens or preteens. You know, the Raina Telgemeier section of graphic novels is still growing quite steadily.
I completely agree with you. I think that's a great call out. I think young reader friendly stuff, mass market, high awareness properties such as Star Wars, I think, fall into that kind of a category. There is certain material that I think is worth stocking at like a bookstore or a mass market outlet, and other material I think is not.
Yeah.
You know, putting like Buffy the Vampire Slayer out at a Barnes and Noble, sure, good idea. Putting Animal Man Volume 1 by Grant Morrison, probably not.
Yeah.
Even though it's brilliant material.
Yeah, it's for a very specific audience, let's put it that way.
Even something like Star Trek Year 5 Volume 1 Odyssey's End, which is at rank 101 or whatever, that did 898 units. Oh, it's Star Wars. Last time I was in a bookstore, they had maybe a shelf, or Star Trek, I mean, they had a shelf of Star Trek material.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas at one point, they had multiple bookcases of Star Trek material.
Ah, okay.
Now, that would have been maybe 20 years ago or whatever, and I attribute that to not as many shows on the air for Star Trek as there had been at that point. Novels being continuing sagas across multiple novels versus done-in-one novels and other things. You know, I think that potentially there is lessons to be learned from how the Star Wars novels, Star Trek, I keep doing that, sorry, the Star Trek novels were done over the last few decades. Too longer stories, too many franchises, too much material coming out, whatever, that could apply to what has happened in the intervening time in comics.
Mm-hmm.
But when we've only got 40-ish new items that are selling over 1,000 units, again, Q1, not great sales, I get it, but some of these things are, again, in line with trends that we've been seeing for quite some time.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. Yeah, and, you know, we had been kind of following this trend, this downward trend for sales in the collected edition in the direct market for a while. And I think now the next, you know, 6 months to a year are going to be completely different in terms of, you know, being able to make statements, because who knows what the trends are going to be.
I don't think we're going to see a sudden huge uptick in sales.
No, that's a very good point. Yeah.
I'd love to see that, but I think that, I mean, we know, again, using the example I had in the January numbers of Tribe Comics and Games here in town that was looking at potentially a really robust March, but South by Southwest got canceled. That impacts a number of their customers. Mm-hmm. There's the stay-at-home order that's kind of closed them down. You know, we're going to see bad sales in March, potentially no sales in April. We just don't know how things are going to try to recover from that. And I think they can recover. I don't think it's a done deal or anything, but it's certainly not going to be easy. And it's going to shake out that excess material people have complained about for a while.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need every comic that's being published to be published as quickly or as often, or maybe at all in some cases. And everybody's going to have a different opinion as to which one should be cut and which what shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Don't care. Don't want to get into that. We've got more material than the current market as it is evolving can sustain. That's going to impact creators. It's going to impact publishers. It's going to impact retailers, and it's going to reverberate through the industry, because the period we're entering into is going to be a period of some sort of a change, and probably the biggest one possibly ever, but certainly on the scale of the distributor wars in the 90s that shook out a lot of stores and publishers, and the shift to the direct market back in the 70s and 80s. I would be hard-pressed to name anything that has had potentially as big of an impact as this could have in the history of comics.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think it's, as they say, uncharted territory for sure.
But it's also worth pointing out, comics successfully moved to the direct market. They successfully navigated to a single distributor. They can successfully navigate to whatever comes next. Doesn't guarantee success, but it's certainly possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as I'm looking at some of these things in the 300-400 unit range, I mean, some of these are smaller publishers, you know, Valiant, Vault, things like that. Others are, I would almost say, ill-conceived projects from larger publishers like Future Foundation, which sold 446 units.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say it was a horrible book. It certainly had its charms and stuff, but not one I would have ever pegged as it was going to be a big seller to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So it just, I mean, some of these are bleak sales figures.
No, that's what I was, I mean, I'm just looking, even just getting out of the top 100 and the top 300, it's just, it's staggering how low some of those sales are. And I know for some, especially when you think about the creator-owned avenue, a lot of those, the old model used to be that you would put out the issues to keep yourself going until you could get to the collected edition to generate the income for either profit or to keep your series going. And now I think that's just not a feasible business model for a lot of people, especially at Image. And I think that's another reason why you're seeing people being driven to the other publishers, because they're getting some more support to keep going.
Well, yeah, because we've seen stuff out of some creators. I think it was Jim Zub who was saying, you know, yeah, you launch a title, it's going to do so well. By the time it gets to, I don't know, 20 issues in or whatever, you're doing it to promote the trade now that you've gotten a couple of those out. Now that's where the money is coming from, is the trade side. And then the continued monthly issues to subsidize the production of the content for the profitable trade. And that may have worked before, but with these numbers, I don't know if it would continue to work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we may start to feel the impact later in the year or this time next year of things that kind of were able to continue through this duration, but never fully recover given, you know, if these sorts of lackluster sales are the new norm. And it's hard to know if they are. It's hard to know if this is just first quarter, you know, sales slump, and it would have recovered afterwards, or it's not going to have the chance to recover because of the shutdown in April.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
Again, for a lot of these publishers, the smaller ones that are accounting for a percentage at most of store sales. We may see them shift towards digital. That may not be a bad thing, but there comes a threshold amount of sales that if the publishers above that switch to digital, they're essentially, you know, dooming part of the retail community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the entire industry needs to find some way to come together in a mutually beneficial way to get through this. And I don't know how well the communication has been between the retailer community, the publisher community, Diamond, either within either any of those individual silos, and certainly across those different levels. Again, just weird times we're moving into.
Yeah, I mean, I think we just have to hope that the enormity of the problem will hopefully help drive people in the industry who don't always work together or aren't always willing to work together. And I hope that they're able to realize that this is one of those times where you do need to put aside some of your differences and realize that some short-term pain may be, you know, on your individual side, maybe best, what's best for, you know, in the industry, like to not necessarily always just try to maximize your short-term gain. Cause I think that that's one of the biggest problems in the comics industry is that you have so many different companies just trying to do what's best for them at that moment. And in the long run, it's kind of creating problems for everyone. And if this is an opportunity to try and think a little bit longer term and a little bit more collectively, and I hope that they do that.
Well, and I think we are seeing some of that from some of the publishers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dark Horse throttling back their output, not going digital during the duration, doing some discounting and returnability. Marvel doing some deep discounting. I think Image has also announced some returnability and other things. So we've seen a number of these publishers kind of step up and try to do things to help out. I think some of them may also have been caught a little off guard by the decision Diamond made on short notice to stop distributing new stuff. But again, I think that was kind of forced by the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully all the publishers have a chance to establish a fairly good theoretical game plan and are given enough lead time by Diamond before things ramp back up to solidify that into a very specific actionable game plan that they can communicate to the retailers, and that the retailers have had a chance to share their concerns and their needs to the publishers.
Mm-hmm.
I think as readers, what we can do is, as much as we can, giving everybody's individual circumstances, continue to support our local retailers, to support the creators out there, and to stay engaged with the hobby, and to let the stores know what we are and are not going to be getting as things move forward. You know, some people are going to find themselves or have already found themselves out of work.
Mm-hmm.
If you are finding yourself that way, you've got to do what's financially responsible for you, and that may mean cutting comics. If that's the case, talk with your retailer, be upfront with them about that. Here's what happened, you're out of a job, whatever. So they're not caught flat-footed thinking they're going to hang on to this material and you're going to pick it up and they're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sharing of information, I think, is what's going to get us through this period of the industry. And likewise, to that effect, if listeners have specific questions about the numbers, about the sales trends, whatever, that could shed some light on how the industry may get through that this period, by all means, post on the Slack channel or on the forum and let me know.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm just seeing such a dichotomy between the really successful titles of like Harleen and the really not so successfuls further down on the list.
Yeah, it is a pretty stark difference.
Yeah, and it's hard to point to any particular reason as to why. I mean, I think part of why DC didn't do so well this time around is they just didn't have much new material come out.
Yeah, that's true.
And we don't know what that's going to look like in March necessarily. Even what they released may not make it out to some stores. And then, again, April, there could be no new material. Yeah, normally I would look at this and have concern over the low sales, but mitigate some of that with just, it's first quarter, we know February is usually not great, and we're up 30,000 from last month. The up 30,000 from last month is less of a silver lining given the amount of Star Wars reorder activity we've got, because I doubt that's going to be repeated, you know, moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at this point, any future-looking statements are questionable at best.
Yeah, it's kind of we're in a wait and see approach, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. This is the kind of unexpected calamity that I've been kind of worrying and cautioning about for years now. Of, is the industry so helpful it could withstand some unexpected blow? And I think this definitely falls into that category of unexpected and traumatic. And I don't know that sales are robust enough that everything's going to come out of this okay. I don't think the entire system is going to collapse. And I think some people have proclaimed the demise of the direct market prematurely. But it will evolve, it will change, and at least for a little while, it will probably shrink.
Yeah, that's true.
But I think everyone who gets up in arms about that may also be the same group of people saying that there was just too much material coming out anyways. So if this is what it takes for that kind of, you know, correction or adjustment, it sucks, but at least we've got the excess material to cut, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
If we can focus on the titles and properties that are doing well and shore that up, that gives the opportunity for the industry to, you know, regrow back, you know, into its current state after the fact.
That's what we'll hope for.
Yeah. If we look at the price points and such, what we see this time around is $9.99 was the predominant price point with about a little over 15% of the items at it. Almost 12% of the items at $19.99, and really about 2/3 of the items being in that $20 or less range. This, I think, is a really good thing moving forward, where a lot of readers are going to be cash strapped. I think orders are going to be tight for retailers. So big ticket items, while they may continue to come out, I hope they get throttled back, and I hope everybody is looking at those carefully before committing to them and before telling the retailers they want them if they may not get them. Because this is a period of time where communicating with your retailer what you want and can afford is increasingly important, just so they don't go out on risky gambles that don't pay off.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
So I think we'll continue to see a couple of, you know, high-priced items, artist editions, some omnibuses and stuff like that, but probably not as many over the remainder of the year that we might have seen otherwise.
Oh, yeah. I think anything that's already been sent to the printer and has either gotten out of the printer, you know what I mean? Anything that's already kind of like really a sunk cost, they'll definitely probably push through just so they, if they can get any revenue. But anything that hasn't been printed yet, I think they'll hold off on.
Well, and that's where we've got this kind of middle ground of material that's hit the final order cutoff. Some of it has not only been sent to printers, it has been printed and was trying to ship to Diamond. Others is sitting at printers. Others has already been sent to the printer, but maybe not printed. So we've got, you know, the first few weeks of April's worth of material kind of stuck midstream in the pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the stuff that may be oversaturated for what the market can bear afterwards. Maybe it's not. We just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But then what happens to the stuff that hasn't hit the final order cutoff, and what happens to the April previews, which I have no reason to think is not due when it was normally due. But if they're stopping shipping for a month, does that mean we don't get a May previews? What does it mean? You know, do we find a lot of stuff getting re-solicited when things come back up? We just don't know.
Yeah.
So kind of crazy times.
Yeah, no, I think that's the perfect way to describe it. Crazy times.
Yeah. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it. And hopefully next time we convene, we'll have positive news. Let's hope for that.
Well, at the very least, next time we convene, I'm hoping we have March sales data.
Yes, that's a good point.
And I think, again, with March, we're going to have to take a closer look not only at the retail ranking for things that may have been discounted, but also that first week of release, because things that have been released on March 4th are going to have a different kind of sales dynamic than stuff on the 25th, just because of the shutdowns in the intervening time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Especially considering, yeah, as the further weeks in March you get, certain parts of the country, you basically wouldn't be able to have sales or extremely reduced sales. So there's going to be some tweaks there for sure.
Yeah. And then that's going to be potentially where things leave off until they pick up in May, June, or whenever. And personally, I'm in favor of this stay at home thing, this whole shutdown thing, lasting as long as it needs to get us through the pandemic as safely as we can, but also over as soon as it can so we can get back to kind of life as whatever the new normal becomes.
Yep, that makes sense.
So with that, I think we'll call it an episode.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify that you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or as few as 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Ath, object, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.